race founder Myron Angstman won his first K300 title that year when he beat the late George Atla. In a controversial finish, Angstman won by 15 seconds. Anyway, 1983, 44 teams started that race. 28 of them finished, 16 of them scratched. And Myron, we'll get to the finish here in a little bit, but tell us a little bit about that race leading up to the last couple of hours of it.
Well, it's a different era. The races were a lot different back then than they are now here in Bethel and all over the country, of course. They were not the hectic pace that we now have. There were trail issues. There were long rests taken. So we had some stoppage on the race. The primary stop was out by Whitefish, where the trail was blown in. It wasn't snowing, but there was a lot of blown in snow. And everybody that was in the front part of the race stalled out there. And as I recall, it was actually daylight that finally got people going. You couldn't make out the trail until daylight happened. And then you could see the next trail marker up the ways. And so we all got out of there. And that meant there was a big pileup of teams coming into Kalskag that day. And even though we had rested a bunch, there was still another break at Kalskag. And then everybody kind of left in a group. Mike Williams Sr. was in the same group I was. I remember that specifically because I remember talking to him on the trail that night when we encountered a spot where there's a little open bubble hole on the river, and both of us hightailed it out of there. But anyway, the race was really heated up by the time we got to Tulixac. There was no mandatory rest in Tulixac in those days. So the stop there was fairly short. Nowadays, it would have been no stop at all had we gotten there with that much rest behind us. But we all stopped for a half hour, 45 minutes. And we took off out of there. And I remember these teams that were ready to leave towards the front. It was George, who was first out. And then there was Joe Garney, Herbie Nyakpuk, Clarence DeWar, and myself were among the first ones out. I will say this, it's not clear where some of those teams ended up, because I won the race and I started behind those guys, and a couple of them, I'm not sure what happened to them. The trail was not very well marked, I will say that. There were problems with the trail marking. So I went down the trail, and I remember, I thought about this a little bit more. I passed Herbie Nyakpuk right away, and for me, that was pretty surprising, because Herbie Nyakpuk was a star of the Iditarod, and I caught him on the trail and passed him on the trail shortly after Tulixac. Then I caught Joe Garney and passed him up. I never did see Clarence DeWar. Somehow or another, he left in front of me and got into Bethel behind me. I don't know where he got turned around. It's hard to say. But I was going along, and I didn't really know for sure. It was not clear how many teams were ahead of me. But I came upon George stopped in the trail about 3 miles above Queefluck on the Kuskokwim Slough. And he couldn't get his team going. So I passed, and George got his team up to follow me, and he followed me into Queefluck. And I noticed as soon as I passed him that there were no sled tracks in front of me. So I was pretty sure that I was in the lead at that time. And I had only started racing 4 years before that. So that was pretty exciting to pass the Spirit of the Wind on the trail and discover I was in the lead of a race that was a pretty big deal even back then. So we got to Queefluck, and we learned that the trail took the back trail from Queefluck into Bethel, which is sometimes known as the Disneyland Trail. And that's a kind of a tough trail to follow. And so George and I are headed out, and right away we took turns getting off the trail. And you would miss a turn because there was a little fork and it's not clear which one was the marked one. This went on, I suspect there were half a dozen exchanges going back and forth. One guy had, the other guy had. And then we pulled out on the Kuskokwim, and now that wasn't going to be a problem anymore. And when we got to the Kuskokwim, I was ahead. I remember pulling out of the river and Mike Shantz leaned out of a truck at about 4:30 in the morning and said, "Hey, Byron, how are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm doing pretty good." So we started out and there's lots of overflow in the Kuskokwim, and my team was kind of used to overflow and they went right into it. And that proved to be a mistake. That was probably 3 miles from the finish line. The overflow got deep and we had to take a left turn back to the trail where George was. He was on the trail. He went around the overflow, but we caught him up right away. My team was clearly stronger at the time. But at that point, of course, we were in what was no man's land. So any passing that had to occur then had to be on the run. Okay, so we went down the river. You could see the lights of town. Obviously, I knew where I was, and my team was tucked right in behind George's sled. Now, before the race, Bob Sept, who was the race vet, had brought me out a signal whip, and he said, "Hey, you should try this sometime. That's what the professionals use to speed their dogs up when they need extra speed." So I pulled that whip out of the sled, and I tried to snap it. I had never done it in my life, and I knew that that's what you do with them is you snap them in the air, but it's an art and it's not automatic. So I tried doing that 3 or 4 times, nothing happened. In fact, I whacked myself in the back of the head one of those times. And then, because that wasn't doing anything, I tried slapping it on the ice to get the team to speed up. It had no effect on my team whatsoever, none at all. So I put it back on the sled and we continued on at exactly the same pace into the town. I was right behind my leader wasn't a foot and a half from George's sled. We got to Brown Slough. Both teams tried to go into Brown Slough, which is very common during races. And both of us had to get off and steer him back onto the trail, but I'm still behind George at that time. Then we headed up to the bank. This is right now where the small boat harbor is. There was a little corner there where they would park barges in the fall. And then you could climb up to Front Street, right at that little corner. And when we get to that corner, the corner was a few feet wide and it was full of water. Right at the base of the bank, there was a puddle that was probably 10, 20 feet long. And it was fairly deep. It was probably 1.5 to 2 feet deep. I was behind George and he was going through the water and his team stopped right in the middle of water, which is not unusual. This happens to dogs, especially dogs in the interior, sprint teams that are used to nice groomed trails all the time. They're not excited about water. Mike and I are fairly used to water because we see it all the time and my dogs are pretty good at water. So anyway, George stopped right in front of me. I urged my dogs past and I had an old leader named Funny. And he started past and he was going to get through that water and get to the finish line. He was partway past George's team when George's dog, one of his dogs, jumped over the line and stopped the team. And George hollered quickly at me. Actually, what he said was, "Get him," meaning untangle him. And I know that George, who is a very clever racer, figured that if I did that, I'd be off the sled and he'd be on the way to the finish line. But what happened was this. I went up and I put his dog back on the other side. And the moment I did that, I hollered at my leader, Funny, to go. And he did. He took off like a bat out of hell. And he wanted out of the water, you see. So he took off and I grabbed the sled as it came by, managed to sort of stay upright, and got to the top of the bank and I looked back and George was still in the water. So we motored to the finish line, which is a few blocks down the street in front of about where the First National Bank is. And we won by 18 seconds. George complained right away that I broke every rule in the book. I didn't know which rule he was talking about. I actually wrote the rules and I couldn't figure out anything I had broken. I told him to take it up with Marshall. That was Ernie Baumgartner, who was standing right there. Of course, he was 10 feet away. So he took it up with Marshall, and the Marshall made the decision in 5 minutes and said there was no rule broken. But, you know, the controversy lived on for many, many years. till today, because, you know, like, there's no question that George was a star of the racing world, especially so in rural Alaska. A lot of people in the Bethel area were big fans of George. If he said that I cheated, they were going to believe that I cheated. I did not cheat, but it's hard dissuading people. It's sort of like a stolen election, you might say. And it never did die, but it has kind of disappeared. And the difficulties that were associated with that, from my point of view, have also disappeared. I remember the night well, and it was quite a night.
Myron, a painful moment for you?
Painful, yes. I mean, winning your first race and having it challenged right at the finish line, painful. But as I then thought about it and went forward, I got calls from virtually all over the country afterwards saying, hey, don't worry about George. He's an extreme competitor, and he usually does not react well if he loses. And in fact, I was told that a couple of times he had gotten in fist fights at the finish line, which fortunately we avoided that night.
You know, we're talking about George Atla, Joe Garney, Clarence Towart, Guy Blankenship, Jerry Austin. These are the teams behind you. None of them lightweights. And to have beaten them before George came into your face, it must have been a pretty big high that just fell away quickly.
Well, it was. I mean, I was beyond belief that I'd actually finished in front of all those guys. I knew I had a pretty good team, but there were not many opportunities to measure them up against these other teams. The only one that I knew I could pass on the way up was Jerry Austin, who was the defending champion. And that was kind of encouraging when I passed him going up into Antioch. But the way the races were run in those days, you didn't get a chance to really size up the other teams until the end. And I was just out of my mind with excitement as we were coming to the finish line that I was possibly going to win this race, and then did win it. And it took a lot out of it, but no longer does it.
That's good to hear, Myron. That race, you finished in 65 hours, 57 minutes, 21 seconds. Now, without getting exact, it's about a 40-hour race.
Well, it's actually a 37-hour race, and I have done it in 37 myself, and the race has no comparison to the race in those days. And that's not to say that the dogs are any better, because, boy, there were some great dogs back in that era, but the mushers are better. At least they know how to race more. They may not be better mushers overall, but they certainly know the art of racing way better than we did back in those days, because the equipment's better, the food's better, the strategy's better. They've learned what a dog can actually do in terms of speed and rest. And on the trail, care is so much better. I didn't use one boot that year, or in 86 when I run again, I didn't use a boot. And in 92, when I did it in 37 hours, still no boots. But things have changed, and it's a big, big change.
In that same race, Mike Williams Sr., Mike ran his first race. Go ahead, Mike.
That story beyond Antioch was something that Myron, all of us stopped there because we lost the trail and the markers were gone. Of course, I was parked by Jerry Austin, Blanca Wassley, and Gus Chuknow from New Studio. And after we took a nap for a few hours, we got up and started looking around, and we spotted the marker. Blanca, Gus, and I and Jerry Austin, we started moving. Everybody followed us to Cal's game. So that was one of the most memorable races in my 25 or more races on the Cusco. That was one of the best starts that anyone could have Cusco 300 career. I think it's the best race I've ever entered.
Let me interrupt you here for a second. What I'd like to do is have KYUK run that clip again, And I'd like you to listen because you're interviewed, you find out what position you're in at the finish. And we get to see a little bit of you from 1983. So if they could run that clip again, just listen to this, Mike.
Mike Williams claimed seventh place, and with it, the title of Rookie of the Year.
Mike, did you get lost out there too?
Huh? No, I haven't gotten lost.
The only guy who hasn't.
Well, I was lost once, but I didn't go far. Austin, and I found it. That's the only time.
You're the Rookie of the Year this time.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Congratulations, Mike.
So, Mike, you were a happy guy there, Mike.
Yeah, coming down from Quislet was, traveling with Guy Blankenship and Jerry Austin, and we took turns, and it was a very good run. It was a very fine finish for me.
44 teams started that race. You were a rookie, and some of the names we've just mentioned, Jerry Austin, Epe Anderson, George Atla, Herbie Nyerbuck, Epe Anderson, and a bunch more. Did you ever in your mind think that you could be in seventh place in that race?
No, I would never thought seventh place would be. I was very surprised because I know that Joe Garney, Herbie, and Clarence were out there, and I thought they already finished. But somehow they kind of missed the trail and spent a little bit more time out there.